Morning. It was great to see everyone out on farm. We were a little bit concerned when we had some questions midweek from some Australian male investors asking about whether they should be wearing flat shoes or heels, but we managed to get everyone through okay. In terms of today, we've got a full agenda to get through this afternoon. In terms of how we've followed our value chain this morning, we plan to do the exact same thing with our speakers from the SLT this afternoon. Everyone will be speaking for kind of 10 to 20 minutes, and then we'll have a good chunk of Q&A time at the end. In terms of the presentation that we're running through today, it should all now be in your inbox and is going up on the NZX and ASX right now. The other thing which we're doing today for our Q&A, which is a little bit different, is utilising a tool called Slido. So if you all head to sli.do or slido.com and enter that event token there, we're going to run all our Q&A through that function. And what that allows people to do is see all the questions which have been asked and actually vote on the ones that they like. So when it comes time to asking questions, the ones that the audience really want to hear will be prioritised. We've also got the Wi-Fi account there and the password, so that's all live now. So that's it from me. I'll hand over to Leon to get us kicked off.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. Can I grab that clicker? All right, good to see you back from all of the trips, and it's been great just engaging with you since you got back and hearing some of the feedback, and sounds like everybody's enjoyed getting out on farm and seeing some of the investment and our plants up and running, so fantastic to get some of that feedback. Look, like I said this morning, we've got an opportunity today for you to engage a lot more with our leadership team. Sense, see and feel and touch and breathe what Synlait's like. I hope you got a sense of what that was like walking around the business. I can kind of say this because I'm still relatively new, but I think it's a pretty special place. And I think some of those qualitative aspects around Synlait, the culture, the way in which we operate, the innovation, the sense of being disruptive and doing things differently, is part of who we are and it's part of what we stand for as an organisation. And I hope you continue to see that through the day. So look, as I said, we're going to go through a range of leadership presentations. I'm going to kick off. There is material that some of you may have seen in here, but I think it's important we just go over the fundamentals. We're also going to present some of the new work that we've done on purpose, ambition and strategy. We launched this to staff and suppliers a couple of weeks ago. It's a bit of a rethink on our direction. It's not fundamentally different, but we think it provides a bit more clarity and alignment for our business, and you should see the strategic choices that we're starting to make. So it's a chance for us to launch that, I suppose, to you, give you some colour to the direction of travel that we're taking and hopefully get you excited about it. Before I start, I thought that I would just run through some of the achievements in the business that we've had over the last 12 months. And at our staff and supplier conferences, I went through a much larger list because I think that often in organisations you're so busy thinking about the next thing and what your problems and challenges are and your risks, and we've got our fair share of those, which we'll talk about, but we've also achieved a heck of a lot, and we often move on to what the next thing is before we've had a chance to reflect and celebrate. And I can also sort of say this because I haven't been there that long and I'm not really responsible or accountable for delivering any of this. This was all balls that were up in the air. But our team this year has built that new liquid factory inside of 18 months. That was just a slab of grass. And if you look at the professionalism, the automation, the quality of the build, to have that stood up in around 18 months from signing a contract with Foodstuff South Island, and for us to be able to showcase it here today, in my experience in this industry, with that level of complexity, that's an outstanding achievement to come in on time and on budget. Not only that, we've started our 10-year contract with Foodstuff South Island, entering into a brand new category. Fresh milk is not an easy category. It's daily fresh. You get your supply rhythm wrong and your forecasting wrong, it can create a real mess really quickly. So, you know, to have a customer that's being serviced and is extremely happy with our service is a great achievement for the business. At the same time, up in the North Island, we've got a long way towards building a new advanced capable dryer in Pokeno. That site is well on its way to being commissioned, and we're on track and within budget there as well. And a great achievement for the team is that, again, this is all in the presentation, we've recruited 11 million kilos of milk solids up there. That's an outstanding achievement in a pretty competitive milk supply environment. I know 6 months ago many of you were asking us, how are we going, are we on track? But to secure that from very loyal farmers who are typically much more traditional and closer to the incumbents like Fonterra, that's a great achievement to have that milk locked away. And we had many of those suppliers down with us 2 weeks ago. And you know, they're just so passionate. We've attracted, I think, the cream of the crop in that area. Likewise, we've also expanded our Lead with Pride programs with that farmer base and our PKE free incentives. So we're taking non-sustainable feed out of the New Zealand supply chain. We've recruited 300 plus people this year to staff and fund all of those and build our capabilities. So we're continuing to invest in our people. We launched a new brand and a new purpose. The new brand came out in October, new purpose in November. You may have seen the pink pathway, which is a great expression of how we keep our people safe in line with our brand values and purpose. So that's really built some momentum. Our customer service levels have been in excess of 98%. That's a pretty good track record in terms of servicing our business. We've processed 12.4% more milk this year. Again, that's a reflection of the efficiency that we're driving into our plants. And in one area, in the canning plant you saw today, we've reduced stops in that plant by 95%, which is why we're driving such extraordinary outputs there. We've doubled our lactoferrin capacity and getting really good value out of that high-value specialist nutritional product. We've established the Palmerston North Innovation Centre and recruited key people in that to develop core categories for us. And we've installed a really advanced UHT pilot plant, which we call Cindy, which allows us to test a range of variables to establish capability in that category. And then the list goes on around some of the business improvement activities. We often talk about the outward-facing stuff, but we've kicked off an ERP implementation just in our spare time. We've improved our procurement savings. We've nailed our FX rates against our incumbents. We've done about 2,500 staff training courses to equip our people for new roles. We've significantly improved our risk frameworks in that space, stepped up our quality aspects and secured FSSC 22,000 registration on Dunsandel recently. So look, I could go on and on and on, but I think it is important just to acknowledge this is a business with momentum. We're achieving a lot. We're moving fast. We're excited about that growth. And what's important there is that all of that was achieved whilst leadership was transitioned. So look, I think it's an outstanding reflection of the business that we can transition to new leadership and maintain momentum through that. And I'm really proud to be part of this team. I can't take credit for the achievements, but I hope you got a sense. They're a real infectious bunch of people. They do get under your skin, and I'm really, really proud to be part of it and excited about the future. Okay, so opening gambit, a lot to be positive about in terms of our achievements. Let's talk about what we have and where we're going. So I'll give you a bit of a reflection on that. Then we'll just go into a deeper dive, and we're going to dance across our value chain, starting with plan, source, make, deliver, and then we'll talk about how we're going to grow and our environmental aspects. But what you will see on show today is aspects of our leadership team. Some of them will present. Some of them are in the room. And look, what I'm really pleased with is that I've inherited from John a really strong, capable, diverse leadership team. We've got experience in terms of individuals who have been with us from day one. Rob, who speaks next, is employee number three. But we've also got people who have come from outside of industry, from banking, from other sectors, or from really deep experience in the dairy sector. So you'll get a chance to interact with a lot of those people today, and I think it's great that we've got the bench strength that we do in the business around our leadership, and that's been invested in. When we rebranded, the team took this picture out that we'd been using as our cover slide for our presentations because it didn't have any pink in it. It reflected green and blue, and it sort of showed the colours of the common industry incumbents that are in our competitive set. And I asked the team to put it back in because I think it tells an amazing story. I think it talks about what we do. New Zealand has amazing natural capital. Look around you, it's just so beautiful, and you will experience that today. But that natural capital gives us a stunning environment in which to produce food. It's an amazing asset for New Zealand, and we tap it well. And it's reflected in the mountains and the blue sky. That's pretty much a bluebird day that you've got today. And sitting down the bottom is the backbone of New Zealand's economy, our agricultural basis, driven by dairy production, which is flavour of the decade, I suppose, in terms of how we've been tracking. But, you know, we're pretty good at farming in New Zealand, and I hope you saw on farm that the care we have around animal welfare, around productivity, around how we look after staff on farm, that's pretty world class, right? Now, what I think Finlay does uniquely well is it harnesses the natural environment, New Zealand's agricultural background, and it puts world-class processing capability in the middle, right? So that's reflected in the site that you've been through, and that's part of the model of how we think we drive sustainable competitive advantage for our shareholders and create value for our customers by harnessing these three things: amazing natural capital, world-class farming systems, and state-of-the-art processing capability. So that's kind of, if you were to say, what does Synlait do well? I'd say it's harnessing those three things. We've presented this before, but again, we're sort of proud of the statement, and we'll probably continue to reiterate. Our purpose is doing milk differently for a healthier world. We think it combines three things really clearly. This idea that we take a different approach to things. We don't believe in doing things differently just to be different. We believe that to fundamentally be better than our competitive fit, we have to take a different approach. So that underlies our mindset and our attitude, and it's been with us since our formation. We started out with a fundamentally disruptive and different DNA and mindset, and we're looking to hold that culturally in the way we go forward. We're also into essential nutrition, so a healthier world reflects the fact that we drive healthy products for a hungry world. But at the same time, understanding that a healthier world, we need to make sure we elevate people and planet at the same level as profit in our business. And you would have seen us make some big moves towards sustainability over the last year, and Hamish is going to speak to you later on about our commitments and our progress in that space. So that's our purpose. We've got a really short video clip. I thought we should just share it with you. It just gives you a sense of what's sitting in behind that purpose. And it's just a good day to share this, so we'll play that.
Down here, we are doing milk differently. We bring out the best in nature and unlock its potential through new thinking and new technologies. Our mission is to be a catalyst for change, to make sustainability not a catchphrase, but the core of all we do. Because if we can do it, others will follow. And that will change our industry, benefit our country, and leave a legacy for future generations. It's a hard road to do things differently, to try things that haven't been done, to risk, to challenge. It's a pioneering mindset to stand for more and play a bigger role in New Zealand. Here's to the journey ahead. Here's to reimagining what we do and how we do it. Here's to harnessing the spirit this company was founded on and moving towards a future that we're yet to imagine. Here's to doing it with attitude.
Okay, so that gives you a flavour of some of the material we've been presenting to staff and we use with customers and so forth. And it talks about our future in there, and it's yet to be imagined. I'll give you a sense of what our future is looking like. To create a new future, we need a clear plan and we need an ambition. And we use a really simple model to make sure that we drive that, which I'll bring you some colour to shortly. But the purpose statement in itself is really useful to break down into two. We think about doing milk differently as a way to drive growth, as a way to create innovation and to generate sustainable growth for the organisation. And we're a growth business. We have been for a while. We're going to keep investing, and we're unlikely to pay a dividend until we run out of good ideas. But look, I think that you can see the opportunity space that we're in. You guys know this better than me. The infant nutrition market is $55 billion globally. China growth 16% CAGR over 10 years. New Zealand exports have tripled. And Synlait's 45% share of total exports. So we've built a really strong position in New Zealand's growth in this category, and it remains attractive for us. We're also investing and doubling down in capacity and capability. So I inherited a business with a fantastic balance sheet, and that was investing around $400 million of new capacity and capability. So not only is the opportunity there, we're investing to continue to stay ahead of it and to grow. But we know that we've got to make sure we take a balanced approach to this around people and planet as well. So For a Healthier World reflects the fact that we're acknowledging that the environmental aspects that face us is the problem of our age. I think if anyone is alive today and has kids, you're looking at your kids going, what kind of world are my kids going to grow up in? And every day we get reminders of heat waves in Europe and changes to the environment that are scary for me and when I look at my kids and how they might grow up in it. And what we acknowledge that for New Zealand, the agricultural aspects of our economy drive a big part of our climate footprint. So not only is it the problem of our age, we feel like we're part of something, we have an opportunity to do something about it in a big way. So that's why we've made some meaningful commitments to what we want to do. We're looking at reducing greenhouse gases on and off farm, eliminating water degradation, which is a really big issue for the New Zealand public, incentivising farmers to remove unsustainable feed. We installed New Zealand's first large-scale electro-boiler. Did you get a chance to see the electro-boiler today? No? From the outside. Okay, yeah, it's pretty cool when you see it on the inside, big shiny stainless steel kettle. And look, we also want to set the way for transparency in New Zealand. We still hope to become New Zealand's first B Corp, NZX-listed B Corp, and we're committed to SBTI and CDP reporting. So that kind of gives us some aspects on the healthier world side. This is a visual from what we presented to staff and suppliers around the strategic collateral that we've been developing. And we use a simple model around heart, head and hands. So the heart is our purpose, it's our why. Often it's emotional because it creates meaning and connection for our people. It gives people a sense of why we do what we do, and hopefully gives people a reason to come to work and feel good about doing what they do. But then when we set a plan, we need to make sure we get a bit cerebral and we think about what are we trying to achieve. And we need to have an ambition to do that. So that's our head, our ambition, and our new ambition is 2+0, which I'll step you through. And then when we go to take action, we do that with our hands. So heart, head, hands, and our hands is our strategy. It's the where we play and how we win. So we've got 8 strategic paths, a refinement of our previous strategy that we've been communicating that I'm also going to step you through as well. So purpose has been covered. The ambition aspect is our really what we call is a formula for success. The 2 stands for the revenue growth part and the aspiration of continuing our growth basis. 2 stands for achieving $2 billion in turnover, doubling our business, and moving from around $1 billion in revenue or turnover to $2 billion in 5 years. Right? So just before you all go away and start updating your models, just remember this is aspirational. We want to create stretch for our organisation. And, you know, I believe that a strong ambition and a hard work ethic are the mother and the father of good success, right? So we need to make sure we're stretching ourselves with these goals. Likewise, the plus is about making sure that we acknowledge the role that we play in terms of having a positive impact on planet and communities and creating a positive place to grow, not just to work, for our people with 100% engagement. There's a lot of cliche words around, you know, a great place to work. I think it's much better to talk about a great place to grow, and our organisation with its growth aspects creates huge opportunities for people. And some of the great stories are people that have come in as cleaners or floor sweepers and are now planning our milk supply because they've shown potential and we've been able to give them opportunity. So it's really important we keep that going. The zero aspect is around, if you've got an operations background, you may have heard this concept of zero. The mentality of zero is that we try to drive for zero injuries, zero defects, and zero losses. So this is around keeping people safe. Defects is around making sure your product is of high quality, and losses around making sure you focus on all aspects of productivity to drive efficiency. And loss can be time loss, it can be yields, it can be stops, it can be a whole range of different things. And the mindset that we try to drive with our people is to show that leaders believe that zero is possible. And they start by saying, look, we had a 0 hour. We didn't hurt anyone or have a defect or have any loss for an hour. What do we have to do to make it 2 hours or 3 hours or a day? So that's the way that we start to engage people in the conversation, and it just helps us drive a culture of improvement and getting better every day. So 2+0, that's our ambition, pretty simple, and across those three metrics, we see it as a really simple way to cascade down to our organisation, and people can say, look, I'm part of the zero crew, or I'm part of the two crew, or I'm a bit of both, and that gives them a way to connect to the purpose in a really sensible way. The strategy work we kicked off soon after I came in, I didn't feel like we needed a major pivot on strategy, but we could do with a little bit of clarification and focus. I think that as we've got larger as an organisation, we've got more complex, and it's really helpful to have a clear strategy so that people can follow it and behave and act with autonomy. Otherwise, this complexity ends up funneling back up to indecision at the top. So by empowering teams and providing a clear plan is really important. So we did this work with our leadership team and our board, started to socialise it with senior leaders through the back end of last calendar year and early this year, and then have started to talk more openly about it. It's divided into two areas, 5 strategic pathways focused on growth and 3 strategic pathways focused on enabling and building a world-class value chain across people, planet and profit. Right, enterprise. I'll go through those three second, but I do want to talk you through the aspects of our growth strategy and the strategic choices that we've made. I'll start here, but the 5 growth paths, we acknowledge that we've got a really strong core business in infant nutrition. Yeah, so we need to start there and make sure we fill the bathtub up with all of our activity to nurture and protect that. But you guys have always been telling us we must appropriately and deliberately start to diversify our business to address the concentration risk that we have. We've got concentration risk around site, around customers, around categories. So it's really important that we start to deliberately diversify our organisation. It's also important we diversify our organisation because we buy a bucket of milk and you can make different stuff with that milk. In many organisations, you only need to buy what you produce. We have to buy milk and then produce something off it. So we need to have strategies that help us build complementary aspects to our organisation. So we're starting here with infant nutrition. Drive a broader set of customers in there and start to expand categories within infant nutrition. Really important we do that well. And once we've done that well, we know we've got bandwidth to look at adjacencies. And 2 really clear adjacencies for us are an everyday dairy and food service. So we've talked a lot about functional creams and developing those for the new liquid plant there. Rather than saying our strategy is cream, we think that this channel is really attractive. People are eating out of home, and we've got an opportunity to build a strong portfolio across the dairy basket and come up with a compelling route to market that we believe is disruptive and different. So that's something that Martijn will give you a bit more colour on. Early days, but that's one adjacency that's attractive. And everyday dairy, we're a little bit further down the track there with our liquid milk plant here, the fresh milk that we've got going in, the access to a cheese stream, and again, we see good opportunity across Asia-Pacific to start to grow those categories out. Once we've started to look at those adjacencies, we can look at 2 other areas that we see as being attractive. We've refined what we've historically talked about as adult nutrition down to sports. If you look at the sports nutrition category, it's growing really fast. It's getting good uptake across Asia. It's not very consolidated yet. It's pretty highly fragmented. So we think there's a really good space and opportunity for us. And at the same time for sports, it's really complementary to our asset base. Protein shakes and protein powders will fit really nicely with the capability that we've got. Our next big thing is just making sure that we're in touch with changes around the world, making sure that we're in touch with seeing the next big consumer opportunities and starting to eyeball what's coming at us from a technology base that could enable our value chain but also help us grow. Okay? Make sense? The other thing that we thought about is if we're making these strategic choices, we've got to balance our priorities, but we've also got to make sure that we build them in logical complementary areas. So when we're looking at the bucket of milk that we've got, our infant nutrition business is focused mostly on skim. And if you walked around the warehouse, you see those big blue drums of AMF, right? That's a fat stream that comes out of this product, and we don't get a huge value return for that. Food service will help us monetize that fat stream. So not only is it a good logical adjacency, but it also maximizes the bucket of milk. Sports nutrition has a protein focus. So we see a really good opportunity to use this in a logical way. Whilst we optimize our assets with ingredient sales, we maximize bucket of milk with these three strategies. Yeah? And it's important to understand, if you're in the dairy game, that's kind of how you have to play. You're obliged to buy that bucket of milk. What are you going to do with it that generates value for your shareholders off it and your suppliers? And then the way that we see capturing more of the value chain is through capturing more brand-sided aspects in everyday dairy and looking at the next big thing by looking at consumer trends. Yeah? So move up the value chain, optimize the bucket of milk, make sure the strategic portfolio is complementary and helps us prioritize. Then we come to our enabling strategy. The way that we think about this is we've got three value chains that exist. One in planet, we give and take resources from the planet, and we've got to make sure that we're contributing back to it in a reasonable way, not taking resources from the planet. Around our organization and building a healthier Synlait means focusing on culture, capability, systems and processes that strengthen the organization. And thirdly, the enterprise, making sure that we create value through our value chain, right? So what is it that we're doing in our supply chains, in our manufacturing excellence work streams, around our quality systems and processes to strengthen what we do in the space. And a lot of these strategies is around making sure we enhance what makes Synlait different. We hear a lot around people saying, well, why aren't you just another third-party manufacturer, Leon? What is it that makes you unique and special? And I think there are a number of things across our value chain that differentiate us, and they're things that we're going to continue to invest in to make sure that consumers and customers continue to value what we do. This is a map of our value chain, and I think we've got three very distinct, very obvious points of difference that makes us special and unique to our customers. The first one is we differentiate our milk supply. We pioneered this in New Zealand. We were the first company to say we think that we can ask farmers to do something different on farm in a way that customers will value it and pay them for it, right? All my career in dairy, I took in a commodity product in a factory and I tried to differentiate it with a brand and a recipe. Synlait pioneered saying, no, why don't we get farmers to change it? We'll differentiate up the value stream. It's a really clever way to start to build a proposition for customers. And we'll keep doing that with a whole range of different things and investing in that area. The other thing that I think we do really well, and you've got a chance to see it end to end today, is Canterbury's a wonderful bowl for dairy. It's flat, productive land. We can truck milk into our factory and turn it in a really integrated way into a finished product. If you look at the infant nutrition industry and look at some of our competitors and map some of their movements of products and ingredients, they are nowhere near as integrated as we are. They're processing and drying base powder in one country, shipping it to another and blending it in another. And most of the brand owners don't have that full end-to-end fresh milk aspects unless they're very diversified. So that's something that I think we do really, really well, and we'll continue to invest in that, and Ant and Rob will give you a flavour for that. And the third piece of competitive advantage I think we have is our regulatory capability and our quality systems. We own the registrations for many of our customers, and that gives us a point of difference in the market. So across our value chain, three really clear points of difference. And we're going to build two more, and we're in the process of it. The fourth one is investing in research and category development, and that reflects the investment we're making in Palmerston North. We need to know our customers, we need to know the categories that are developing, and we need to be developing exciting products for them using great technology. So that started with what we've done in Palmerston North. I wouldn't say it's a point of difference at the moment, but we want to turn it into one. And the other point of difference and differentiator we see is around sustainability. Hamish is going to talk to you about some of the work that we're doing there, but look, in time, and even now, we know consumers will pay a premium for sustainable goods and sustainable approaches. So
So the more we start to strengthen that aspect of our business, the more we differentiate. Okay, so that hopefully gives you a flavour of the strategic work we've done, the logic that sits behind it. Against each of those strategic paths, there's a pretty clear plan that just cascades down, and we can start to attach key projects. So we've done a bunch of work. On your tables are the sort of head, heart, hand foldouts. You'll be able to get a sense of those aspects. We did a lot of work around what our shared vision looks like, which is some qualitative stuff, which is really important for people to get a feel for that. So those are available for you to review. I think this is an important slide, but I took it out of the strategic narrative because I think it's important to understand about the cycle and the nature of our business as an investor. And look, we're a capitally intense business, right? We make money by investing carefully and deliberately and consciously in assets where we think we can make money. But we have to build stuff to do that. It's not a simple recruit new consumers and into a brand proposition type model. What that means is we're often building big assets. That means we leverage up, and I inherited a great balance sheet with a leverage ratio less than one. But we've then been able to use that and leverage it to take the next bets on what those things are. And we will then build out, our leverage ratios will increase. We'll have a whole lot of assets. They won't always be full. We then need to start to bring the utilization of those plants up. Then the profitability starts to drop again. Leverage ratio starts to drop with the free cash flow we generate, and then we'll go again. So this kind of pattern, hopefully it doesn't quite spike that high again, but look, I think we'll be able to move to a point where you will see us invest, hold us accountable as investors to making sure we're filling up those assets and de-risking them appropriately, and then continuing to deliver the returns on them. So just a heads up that that's the cycle of our business, and I think it's an important part about the rhythm. One of those assets that we're investing in and is pretty public is the Pekino aspect. I know there's lots of interest in what's going on there. As you would have seen in media, we've had some challenges around the covenant issue that we're having. And it's important that I think as an investment community, we're all pretty clear on what this means for Synlait and what kind of risk it holds for us. Yes, we're not happy that this has occurred. It's a function of the fact that we really want to get on and we've got certain timeframes. But look, the key dates are outlined there just to give you a bit clearer picture on it. The important thing to remember is that we are really confident we are going to be able to complete the build, commission the factory, and produce product on it in early September. So we're fully on track to do all that. Some of you were asking me last night, have you stopped building? Are you going to finish? Are you going to start? And I think it's really important everyone understands that we're completely on track to do that. And we see it as a very low likelihood that anything will happen that will prevent us from doing it. It's a bit hard for me to share some of the legal opinions that we have without both getting technical or sharing information that could be sensitive. But our legal position is really strong there in terms of continuing operations. You can go and seek your own legal views, but from an injunction perspective, a court would look at whether or not you are creating any real disruption to the applier and whether or not you are having any disruption to your own operations. We're committed to our societies, our communities, our suppliers, and we think it's really unlikely based on the legal view we've got that that would ever eventuate. So we remain confident there. We also remain confident in our in the legal process that will carry on through there. And we are continuing to run a stream, which is our preferred stream, that we will settle with all parties. And we continue to reiterate that we're talking to all parties. We remain in good contact with them and talks are constructive and positive. But that's all I'll say in terms of what we're exchanging there. I know there'll probably be some follow-up questions. Graham and I will be available to make sure we take those. Please, if you want to ask, we can, and just respect that there's certain things we can't say, but that's the update that we can provide on Pekino and moving forward. Okay, that's my bit. I'm going to hand you over to Rob, but I think Chris is going to introduce him.
Thanks, Leon. Just having a few questions around the Q&A function. So it's LIPO.com, and then your code to get in is X161.
So our next speaker today is Rob Stoll. So Rob is the general manager of supply chain at Finlay. So who is
Thanks, Chris. That's great. Look, as Chris mentioned, I've been here since Finlay was simply a paddock, and I'm still here basically because this company is really exciting to work for. Look, I get immense satisfaction from working right across the business, but also with our external stakeholders such as farmers, suppliers, and customers. But what really gives me a buzz is problem solving. So I love problem solving, and most of the time we solve the problems. Occasionally it gives me some grey hairs, hence grey hairs. So look, I wanted to touch on planning first, and I've got the clicker here, so I better do that. So look, planning may seem quite dull to a number of you in the audience, but for Finlay, it's given us the proven ability to invest in our value chain ahead of the demand curve. And this has made us a lot of money. It's definitely been the case for A2. Look, we've been rewarded for the fact that we've had capacity there as A2 demands increased and spiked on occasion, and we haven't let them down. And this is illustrated in this graphic here where you can see quite a bit of growth in obviously our milk supply and production over time. We needed assets to process all that milk. To achieve this, we've had to be really clear on our strategy around customers and categories, and we've had to make some calculated bets along the way as well. The milk supply and big chunks of milk supply or big manufacturing assets such as dryers and canning lines, generally you need about 2-year lead time. So you need to be thinking ahead of the curve. And the bigger and more complex that we get, the more that we need to be thinking about other suppliers and logistics networks, because we're actually quite a big player in the infant formula game now. Now another point I wanted to make is we spend a lot of time on filling up these dryers. And we've got a team of planners who almost make it a sport to fill up these dryers, not just with infant formula, but also ingredient products and milk. And we also do a little bit of milk trading, because we've got the milk curve to deal with as well. So it's all about fitting as much product through those dryers and lowering our cost of manufacture. And we've done really well in that, and we've got a low manufacturing cost by international standards for that reason. Finally, we introduced and implemented IBP in 2016, and that's been really important for us to getting alignment in our people. It's also allowed us to move really fast. If we hadn't had a process like this, we wouldn't be able to move as fast as we've been going over the last couple of years, and it's been really good for our communications out to the wider business on what the plans are. So it's the best of breed process. Oliver White, so the other guys that invented S&OP, and one of our continuous improvement strategies over the next few years will be to get Class A accreditation. So sourcing, as Leon mentioned, our milk supply has been a real competitive advantage for us, and also our procurement function as well is becoming one. And that's because it allows us to manufacture specialty products that are value added behind the farm gate. So in understanding the opportunities there, we have recently expanded both our milk supply team and our procurement team. And that's because not only do we need to keep up with the growth, we also need to keep up with industry trends such as sustainability and changes in consumer preferences. So we make a point of partnering with some of the best suppliers that around that can grow with us and also have the same values. So it doesn't matter if it's a milk supplier or another strategic supplier such as our canning providers. So an example is James Strong, who supply all our empty infant cans to us. They've grown with us. They've recently built a plant in Hornby in Christchurch, which is really close to us, and also one in Auckland, right next door to our canning line up there. So that gives us huge advantages. Now, lead with pride. We had a few questions on the farm visit, but I just wanted to unwrap it a little bit more here. We implemented Lead with Pride 6 years ago in 2013, and this was to financially reward farmers for dairy best practice across the four pillars of environment, milk quality, people, and animal welfare. And it enables our customers to differentiate their products to the competitors. So it's quite special, and particularly in the latest environment, it's critical in today's competitive marketplace. The financial incentives we increased last year, which has given us a huge boost in farmer take-up. The premiums are roughly 20 to 25 cents per farm if you get up to the top level. And we're really pleased to announce that we've got another 43 farms that have come on board this year, so it puts us up to just under 50% of our farmers with Lead with Pride, and there's huge momentum because we've got another 70 farmers in the pipeline at the moment. So Lead with Pride is, we're still trying to push the envelope with Lead with Pride. We haven't finished, so to watch the space with this accreditation system going forward. The other thing I just wanted to note is will be our continuous improvement within procurement. We really want to transform that function to a high level because there's a huge amount of value that will be released if we can do that. So Pokeno. So look, we were really happy with our campaign up in Pokeno. It was our first important step into the North Island. And it was critical we made it happen. So we ended up, you can see from the graphic, we got, there's 56 dots on there, so we got 56 farms up in Pokeno, 11 million kgs of milk solids was contracted. Now that's a record for Synlait for a campaign, which was really cool. Some interesting facts around the North Island farms. So they're actually only half the size of the farms in Canterbury, around about 150,000 kgs of milk solids on average. And so we had to go and get twice as many farms as we would have to down here. The climate's different. The countryside's different. There's rolling hills. They're more reliant on rainfall, less pivot irrigators. And there's quite a lot of intergenerational cooperative suppliers up there. Wrapped into long-term contracts with processors. So we're really happy with the effort. We've got a bunch of high-quality farmers, and they are required to be Lead with Pride certified within 3 years. And I should mention this, we've also made a good start on our A2 milk pool up there, which will support the future growth of the A2 business. So deliver. Well, our customers are actually, they ask for a lot, but some of the things that come to mind that they've been pushing quite hard are shorter lead times, greater product security and control, and traceability. So our strategy at Synlait is to actually to give them a really simple one-stop shop, which will create a sticky relationship with those customers. And there's stuff like modern warehousing, export documentation, palletization services. That's where if a customer's sending some product to Asia, we can actually put it onto a smaller pallet straight off the line. Containerization, shipping services, traceability, all that sort of stuff is what they're asking for. You can see on the graphic, a lot of the product is in ANZ, so obviously a lot of the A2 product is in there, but we have other multinational customers such as Danone, etc., which fit into that area. So we've got plans to radically simplify our logistics network at the moment. We've done a lot of work there. And in FY21, when it's implemented, we should see a real good benefit of costs. So watch the space there. There will be some announcements coming out in the future. DIFOTIS is one of our key supply chain metrics, and we're really happy to note that it's at 98%, which is almost, you know, best practice, and something that we were really proud of. In FY20, we're going to have a really big focus on inventory management. Our inventory management isn't bad, but actually we feel we can do a lot better there. So there'll be a range of tighter targets, but also improved customer terms that we'll work on over time. That's really it. On the continuous improvement streams, you'll see what we're focused on mainly is shorter lead times, inventory management, and traceability. And I'll pass on to Chris.
Thank you, Rob. Our next speaker today is Anthony Moss. So Ant is the GM of manufacturing for Synlait. Ant's got over 20 years of experience in the dairy industry, working in New Zealand, throughout Southeast Asia, China, and the Middle East. And he has a Bachelor of Food Technology and a Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration. So in his role as GM of manufacturing, Ant leads our 10 manufacturing sites across Dunsandel, RPD in Auckland, and Pokeno. And the manufacturing team makes up 40% of the overall Synlait staff, and he's responsible for their safety and the quality of all product and for the efficient running of the plants. So I'll hand over to Ant.
Thanks very much, Chris. Good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to talk to you about manufacturing this afternoon. I could happily talk to you about how we run manufacturing within Synlait to get the kind of safety, quality and reliability that we're after. I have just somewhere south of 10 minutes, so we'll get underway. About this time last year, a number of you were in this meeting, and I talked about a program called IWS, which we were implementing. IWS is the manufacturing program that originally has come out of Procter & Gamble. They license it to non-competing companies like ourselves. And we've been running that for about 18 months now, with some really good gains. Across the first half, you've heard already from Leon that we've processed almost 12.5% more milk year on year. And that's been driven from across our wet mix and dryer efficiencies and reliability. 5% of that the availability in the dryers has increased by 5%, and the rate has increased by 5%. That equates to about 990 hours of additional drying time that we've been able to deliver, which is the equivalent of about a third of a new dryer for no capital. So there's some really great efficiencies that we have driven there. The canning line that you saw this morning, when we first deployed IWS into there, had a mean time between stops. That's a measure of how long the line will run on average between stopping for some period of time. It was 2 minutes, is what you heard a year ago. Now it's around 35 minutes. That represents about a 95% reduction in the number of stops, which is quite transformational. And we know that there's more still there that we can go after. We've had runs that go out to 60 and 70 minutes without stopping, or between stops on average, and we've had runs that are running for sort of 9 hours at a time without the line stopping. It's given us a 22% increase in throughput from that canning line, which is, it's a great gain, and there's more there that we believe that we can go after. Milk segregation continues through our plants. As you know, one of the key differentiators, as Leon has said, is that we can take A2 or grass-fed or regular milk right from milk reception all the way through to finished product. If you're part of Rob's team and in the planning section, then that's a whole lot of complexity, but really for the business, it adds for us a whole lot of value being able to do that. Quality control, so Suzanne is up next to talk to you about quality, but we work back to back, and the reality of in manufacturing is that really good manufacturing only happens when quality and safety are at the core of it. So, while we have different functions, really quality has to be right in the middle of manufacturing and of what we do. So one of the things that I think is unique around Synlait is the facilities. I consider myself really fortunate to be able to have worked in a number of places. These are new, large, efficient facilities that you've seen this morning as well. They're large scale, they're efficient. Often you'll have companies that build large scale ingredient dryers and much, much smaller infant capable dryers. What Synlait's been able to do is to get the efficiency of combining both of those. We can fill up as much of D2 and D3 in particular with infant formula and the rest with ingredients so that we're still running efficient assets. We're also able to optimize our milk curve. A number of you are asking on our way around how that works for us. We're able to balance the milk through the year. Commodities run faster, infant runs much slower, and there's a much lower milk component inside infant formula than there is for obviously whole milk or skim milk powder. So that enables us to balance through the year and to get a much squarer shaped curve to our year than a traditional milk curve would otherwise. In terms of asset construction, now we've built $1 billion worth of assets over the past 12 years. IBP that Rob mentioned is what enables us to look forward, and that's a range of new opportunities like the liquid milk plant, risk management, moving into the North Island, category diversity, again moving into liquids, and technology innovations. In doubling the size of the lactoferrin plant is technically very difficult at the very difficult end of dairy manufacture. We do move at pace. We do execute at speed, but we also have high confidence in the standards which we build and in the design thinking that sits behind those. So you met Dan this morning. So he's our commercial manager for liquids, and this is one of the first bottles off the line on day one. Very, very proud moment for him. It's kind of like a new dad with his newly arrived baby. Construction was executed at speed and on time. We commenced the supply starting in April, and by May we were at 100%. For foodstuffs. As we've covered, 10-year back-to-back contract is just good business, and it really is a nice facility. I hope you enjoyed going through it. Commissioning is always a difficult time, but I think that we've got a really, really great plant It's highly flexible. It'll serve us really well in the years to come. Also enables us to move into adjacent categories and support the strategy that Leon's spoken about. Talbot Forest, come August 1st, we'll be taking that on. And that also offers efficiencies for us in terms of milk streams. So we will be able to put milk in there during the peak, which obviously helps us. And there's streams coming from the cheese, mostly cream, that we'll be able to utilise on the Dunsandel site as well and gain efficiencies that standalone business hasn't previously been able to make use of. Pekino is our third 10-ton-an-hour dryer. We've gone with Tetra Pak in this case for consistency. We have a long history with them that enables consistency of product. The third time round, we are much, much clearer than ever before around what we want and around how we want it built and how we want to run it. In terms of staffing, we have most of our staff now in place. We've recruited earlier than we have before. We've had the dryer and wet mix teams down here at Dunsandel running our plants. It's very close to our D3 milk powder dryer. And so we've invested in training these our new staff. And I have to say, really, really happy with the quality of the team that we've built. I think that we've got some excellent people in that team. It seems that the Synlait recruitment brand is just continues to get stronger, and we have really, really strong interest in manufacturing people, I can speak for at least, wanting to come in and join our team, which is great to see. We've also recruited locally. 58% of our team live within 15 kilometres of the plant, and so that's great for long-term kind of longevity of and stability for that site. We're still targeting September, as early September, as Leon said, on budget. We're genuinely excited to be part of the local community. I was at a Matariki celebration there recently. The local school put on a kapa haka show for us, and the local iwi we've been engaging with took us through the presentation on what Matariki means to them. And so we really, really feel like we've become and are becoming part of the local community. And it's a large site, so it really does give us a lot of options for the future as we look to expand. So that's all from me. Chris.
Thank you, Ant. Our next speaker is Dr. Suzanne Horst, who is the Director of Quality, Regulatory and Laboratory Services. Prior to joining Synlait, Suzanne worked for Friesland Campina and Nutrico, including being the Director of Corporate QA, Crisis and Issue Management and Corporate Quality Affairs. She has lectured agricultural economics and food safety at a university I cannot pronounce. And in her role, she is leading Synlait's control of food safety and quality right from raw materials through to delivery to our end customers. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you, Chris. Just practice. Wageningen. Who tries to dare? Wageningen. Wageningen University is the main agricultural university in the Netherlands, main university of Europe. Very happy to be able to talk to you about quality. And actually, you might have thought about, well, what is he doing in between manufacturing and sales? But that has a reason, because if there is no quality and regulatory, so market access between manufacturing and sales, the company stops. Ah, that's the wrong one. What happened? Other way. That one. So you need to have food safety and quality in between. And why is that? Well, I probably don't need to tell you, but we are serving, we are feeding the most vulnerable consumer, probably also the smallest consumer, that you can find, the little babies. And if they are below 6 months of age, then our product, and you're not breastfeeding them, of course, then our product is the only, it's the sole nutrition. And those babies, often it's only one of them, they have parents, and those are the most sensitive buyers you can think of. And they buy our infant nutrition because of the safety and quality. So it's the trust, it's the safety and quality, it's the trust in the safety quality that earns us our market share. And that's why food safety and quality is front and center for Synlait as a company. That's why I'm here. That's the last part of this slide, and actually it's the most important part. But what gives us a bit of a cutting edge, a bit of a competitive edge, is that we try to combine that high level of safety and quality with agility. We can do that. We are the biggest infant nutrition manufacturing in New Zealand, and probably the factory that you saw this morning is the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere. But it's still, as a company, Synlait is still quite nimble, and we'd like to keep it that way so that we can have that competitive edge. Being big on safety and quality and regulatory knowledge and still agile. How are we going to do that? Well, and I'll try to do it the right way. Quality by design. That's I strongly believe in quality by design. We have a big laboratory on site. I'll talk about that later. But in the end, you cannot test quality into a can of infant nutrition. Think about it. All the cans that you test are not the cans you sell. So the best way to really safeguard quality and make sure your production is efficient is to build it in. Quality by design. Quality by design in the way we develop our recipes, so develop them in a way that by design they're compliant and easy to produce for the factory. Quality by design in the way you build your factories and your production lines, in your processes, in your procedures, in the way you do your logistics, your distribution. I think if you do that, the whole process is not only safer for the consumer, but it's also more efficient. It will help Rob to get his high percentage on delivering in time, in full, in spec. I think 89% is quite nice. Of a 98 is quite nice, but 99 is probably even better. And it will help Ant in manufacturing to reduce his stops in the factory even more. So quality by design. It's not that new. There are more. It's also actually in the way the government wants us to run a factory, because what we need to have for the government, for MPI, say the Food Safety Authority of New Zealand, is what they call an RMP, a risk management program, and that is about how you manage your whole operation from the cow to the consumer. And they check on that externally. They will audit us every 2 to 3 months to see if we do it okay. And we also have third-party certificates, such as China Dairy HACCP and this one, FSSC 22000 Food Safety System Certification. Maybe it's coming up in this part of the world, but it's well known in, for example, Europe, America, growing in Asia. And that's also a certification that really looks at how you develop your system, your food safety system. Is your system really helping you to assure food safety and quality? And those kind of certifications, we really like other people to look at us, critically look at our systems, and that helps us to keep those systems up to date. It's not only for my team. I have a nice big team, but actually my team isn't doing quality. Quality is not made by paper or by procedures. Quality is made by people. And you only get those people to do it if everybody owns quality and everybody has the feeling that they're part of it. A big list of areas that we focus on every day. I don't want to go over all of them, but we have to look at compliance to regulations in the country where we produce, so that's in New Zealand, but also in all the countries we want to export to, and compliance to the specific requirements of our customers. We support all the processes, and we help all the other teams to make sure that quality by design can be reached, and we also release the products from raw material to final products during its process through the site. Because, of course, if you start with, I would say, less optimal raw ingredients, you cannot make it right in the factory. Quality by design starts with good ingredients. I think the rest we covered. We do have that in-house laboratory because, yes, of course, quality by design is a big thing, but we still need end product testing to prove that we are compliant with the requirements of governments and customers. And we also do a lot of in-process testing. So we test during the manufacturing process to, if something goes wrong, to pick it up early so that we don't, in the end, find out that something was wrong with the product, because then it's already in a can and that's very expensive if you can't sell it at that point. So we have a big laboratory. We do about 500,000 of tests per year. 70% of those are in our own laboratory. 30% we do with partners outside. Big partners. Why do we use external partners? Well, it's kind of a risk mitigation tactic. So if something goes wrong in our own lab, we don't slow down. And we also, for some tests, it's just better. Other laboratories sometimes have better knowledge because they do those tests more often than we would do it in-house. But nevertheless, a big own laboratory that is certified, ISO 17025 and INS accredited, and those are the accreditations you need to have your lab up to a standard of also external labs, up to a standard that is then trusted by government internally and in our export markets. An own lab has a lot of positives. There is a economic side of it. That's quite often cheaper to do it in-house, but it's also faster and it brings in knowledge and visibility in-house. A little bit about the regulatory model. It's actually kind of a pyramid. In top is the MPI, Minister of Primary Industries, you could say the Food Safety Authority of New Zealand. They set the standard, and they also provide assurances to countries that New Zealand companies export to. They have a small audit team that look after that. Then in the middle, you have recognized agencies. Those are certification organizations, audit organizations, and they can check on the standards set by the government on behalf of the government. So that's Assure Quality is one of them. There are more of them, but Assure Quality is the biggest. And then you have the regulated parties, the companies like Synlait. And we have to make sure our systems are up. So our systems need to be up to the standards set by the MPI and Assure Quality checks on that. For us, it's important to know that MPI has a good relationship with GAC, the customs authority in China, because they can do audits on behalf of GAC. So if you want to have your factory approved for export of dairy or infant products to China, you need to have a GAC approval, and the MPI can do the audit on behalf of GAC. I think that's the most important one here. And of course, that is the approvals we're after. It's a general dairy GAC approval is for life. IF infant nutrition approvals need to be renewed. I think that is the most important part here, and this is part of that because we not only my team is not only in New Zealand, part of the team is also in China, part of the regulatory team, and that helps to move those approvals forward and also to stay in touch with what's happening in the GB regulation, so the Chinese food safety regulation, what's relevant now, what will be relevant in the future. And I think the company that does that job the best is really has a kind of a competitive edge because you need to know what's going to happen in the countries where you want to play. For that reason, we have teams both in Beijing, that's where the regulators are, so that's where we have to be, and in Shanghai, and we work closely together with both the custom GAC and with SAMR. As you all know, we are working on the brand approvals for Akara and Pure Canterbury. Those are submitted. They are completely fine for the technical review, no questions asked there. The only thing that needs to happen now is we need to have an audit on site. It was very slow. Yeah, there were no audits happening. SAMR was not doing audits. But that we see some movement in that. They have been to Europe November last year. They have been recently to France and Russia again, and they're now in Korea. So we see some movement there, and we are confident that New Zealand will be on their list as well in the near future. So then we can progress with those dossiers. Our Auckland plant has a GAC dairy approval, and I saw a question on the slide already. I don't know who asked this question. It was anonymous, so nobody dares to raise the hand. Question on how is it going with the GAC approval for Auckland? Well, that's progressing well. So also there we are confident that we will have that somewhere in the not so far away future. The FDA registration process remains on hold. And there's another one. I think some of you that are following China might have seen the NDRC publication from a couple of weeks ago. It looked like that was it was a new thing, but actually it wasn't. It was quite an extensive publication, but actually just confirmed the direction China is taking already for a couple of years. No change of direction, maybe a tightening of the regulatory environment for infant nutrition importers, but no change. And the tightening, well, that just confirms again how important it is to have your quality and regulatory teams up to date. In the end, we are confident that the companies that have it up to date, that comply with the regulations and that have a bit of patience, they will get there in the end. That's from my side.
Thank you, Suzanne. A next step along the value chain is into sales and business development, and we've got Martin Jager to present on this. So prior to joining Synlait in 2016, Martin was with Friesland Campina, where he has over 20 years of experience in the international dairy industry. So Martin's role is overseeing new customer acquisitions, product and process innovation and development, technical services, category planning, and account management and sales. Obviously, business development is central to this entire function, where he's responsible for alignment of category planning, research and development, and sales, and ultimately delivering significant value growth for Synlait and its customers. Over to you, Martin.
Good afternoon, everyone. thank you for making time to come all the way down here in Dunsandel in beautiful Canterbury. It's my pleasure to step you through, let's say, growth initiatives, right? Our business development status and our view of the coming years. I'll do that building off the strategic pathways as Leon set out. So we'll start out with the core, the must-do, right, infant nutrition, and then we'll work through the other parts of the strategic pathways, which means for everyday dairy, food service, sports, and the next big thing. In the opening, Leon mentioned already, of course, that looking at the opportunity in infant formula, there's no way that we can go around China. We see China, the value growth continuing to be far higher than anything else we can find around the world. But with that, there's also tremendous change in consumer behavior. There's a lot of opportunity around how we can better understand the not just the channel to market, but especially consumer preferences in China as they are developing the coming years. For us, wrapping ourselves around, you could say, doubling down on infant formula China, and of course for us with that, doubling down on the A2 Milk Company business that we have today and growing the pie is tremendously important. We have to get that right. And a lot of the investment that we're making in technical services, but also in category supply chain, is around growing the opportunity and meeting future consumer needs, and with that for us, of course, customer needs. There are definitely, and you can't see that from, well, not even from the front row, right, but there are definitely other pockets of opportunity near China. Southeast Asia has a couple of very interesting markets and subcategories that we're getting much better insight into and developing capabilities for. Overall, for us, continuing to unlock value throughout the chain for infant nutrition is very important. There are significant opportunities on farm to further differentiate our offering, and we'll be trying to see which ones of those match best with a consumer opportunity and customer opportunity. With the improved insight, some of the work is going into new formats. As you've heard before, right, we do believe that ready-to-feed, ready-to-drink products in the infant nutrition category have definite value potential. This is not an overnight execution. These things you have to get absolutely right, and you do have to also differentiate yourself when you come to market with these kind of propositions. So I'll talk later to the capabilities that we've been developing both here in the liquid side but also up in Palmerston North with the team and the infrastructure that we're utilizing. But looking at new formats like liquid is a very important part of the development. But you'll see definitely, and Rob touched on that, a lot going into technology as well. Just the opportunity that we have to, for example, with traceability, not just to help our customers have better market insights, better data to run their business, it will also potentially offer a line of sight all the way from a consumer in China back to farm and linking that to our farm practices. So there's great opportunity there for us. The other priority, I'd say, is to continue to use our technical services team. So when we talk about R&D, that the way we position that, it's innovation and technical services. Technical services is really around step changing, not just new processes and new products, but also looking at step changing, for example, efficiencies and improvements in our current products, but especially also current processes. That will continue to take a lot of our resource as well, and it drives not just financial returns but also quality returns, in terms of we are playing in the super premium segment of the category in China. You all know that, you know, those prices are ultra premium for these products, so quality has to be absolutely faultless, and there's always ways to find further improvement in quality, as we also get to understand what quality means to a consumer. So we're very confident in the clarity of our plan and also the capability of the team, then the infrastructure, but also in customer relationships. As we look at our milk valorization, right? So the milk streaming that Leon described, where infant nutrition carves out milk fat that's not utilized in infant nutrition in 21st century, we see at the same time there's a great development of out-of-home consumption across the Asia-Pacific. And with out-of-home consumption, often having dairy-based ingredients being used, incorporated into products, our significant milk fat source is a great opportunity for us to link that into the food service category. It is early days. It is a market that is both in value and volume growing really well, not just in Southeast Asia developed markets like Singapore and Hong Kong, but across the region. And what we need to build on is now our insights to have the core capabilities to develop not just the products, but especially processes to have products that work well in applications. But at the same time, understand the routes to market and potentially how we would use the routes to market with the offerings with the right partners. There's a lot of work still to be done there, early days, but we're very, very encouraged by what we're learning as we go. And again, the capability with the liquid plant here and the Palmerston North team is very positive, and we feel there's good momentum there to keep building on what we know today. Everyday dairy, so the fresh dairy cabinet that we all see regularly in our local retailer. The way we look at that and we plan on that is really that there are across the Asia-Pacific specific profit pools that are attracting us. Thanks to the Food Service South Island contract, that the 10-year contract that underwrites the liquid plant here in Dunsandel, we now have the opportunity to use that platform, the asset platform, but also the capabilities in-house to look at opportunities abroad further out. Very often quite different consumer expectations around these kind of products, whether it's yogurt or drinking milk or maybe formulated more functional fresh dairy products. This is where we really want to bring a disruptive value-added product range to market. With the acquisition of Talbot Forest Cheese, that's not too far away to be completed. We not only optimize our milk curve, right, our milk supply chain, but it's also potentially in everyday dairy a product range that would fit very well with that. And like I mentioned already, the capability that we've been able to recruit and develop around the Palmerston North team is very synergetic with what we've done for fresh milk here in the South Island, and taking that now forward. These resources are available now to invest in export opportunities. For those of you that have previously learned about our adult nutrition category, I remember when I met some of you before in Auckland, that was like, well, yeah, adult nutrition, that's just about everything, isn't it? We have evolved that. We have learned a lot around what we are targeting within that category. It's no longer adult nutrition. We've zoomed in on sports nutrition, and that's not sports nutrition per se as high-performance whey protein bodybuilding kind of product. It's actually a very blurred category now. It is around lifestyle. It is around different needs and consumers reaching out into sports nutrition. But we see a great opportunity there also because we can leverage the capabilities that we've and assets that we've invested in powder, right, formulated powder that we're pretty good at, as well as liquid products. It is, compared to, for example, Australia or the US, still early days in terms of the development of sports nutrition in the Asia Pacific. And I think that adds to the attraction. You do see the growth rates, and the, especially in value, but also in volume, picking up very strongly, and that's in selected markets in Southeast Asia, East Asia, and definitely also in China. And we plan to focus on really having a good understanding of how the market will look like in the next 3-4 years, especially on terms of consumer usage and attitude, but also around how we would, again, look at a business model that suits us in terms of partnering, how we would enter that that category, that pathway. Next big thing. Next big thing is not really a thing at this moment or a product. Next big thing is a way we want to work right now. We want to make sure that we, first of all, have the discipline to focus on our strategic pathways. So on infant nutrition, everyday dairy, and food service, and sports, and make sure we don't take our eyes off the ball. At the same time, we want to be open and aware of developments and trends and innovation, and whether that's around specific consumer needs or products that are developing traction with consumers, or technology, or for that matter, business models or routes to market. We wanted to make sure that innovation for everyone in Synlait, innovation for all, has a place, and that we are able to continue to be a disruptive, innovative company. And by having this next big thing, and I admit, yeah, it does sound maybe a little bit vague, but the idea behind it will capture and harness the creativity that exists in Synlait and that we nurture, and at the same time make sure that we have the discipline to focus on the strategic priorities. Now, I referred to our innovation and technical team a few times already. We've come a long way the past two and a half years developing that capability and attracting the right people and making sure that we have also processes and systems in place to actually move forward in terms of new product development and market insights. That team has grown very positively in numbers, but especially in quality and outputs. The core team for powder and nutrition and science sits here in Dunsandel, while the liquid and liquid packaging processing team sits in Palmerston North, and we tie that together through very clear planning and communication processes. We've been putting a lot of effort also in developing third-party relationships, whether that's academic or commercial research relationships, in order to be able to leverage and accelerate some of the capabilities outside without having to invest in that and sink cost into Synlait. And some of these relationships are within Australia and New Zealand. Others are in Europe and the U.S. And here I just want to touch on Palmerston North, because I think all of us at Synlait are extremely impressed by how that team, how that capability has developed. It's basically just over a year old. Really amazed by the quality and the attitude of that team. Very young, but they've integrated into the Synlait way of working really quickly, wrapped around the commissioning and validation of the products here in the liquid plant. They have very quickly already picked up on some of the basic capability development that we want to see for everyday dairy and for food service. And Massey, as infrastructure, also hasn't disappointed us. We have been able to draw on a lot of the infrastructure of Massey very easily. We've been very well supported by that infrastructure also to set up our pilot plant. And that pilot plant has really returned on the investment already in the first year. We've continuously been using that pilot plant to do product development, to test processing conditions, for example, before the liquid plant here was built. And we were able to almost seamlessly transition all that work in Palmerston North into Dunsandel here so that we could start up and start supply to our foodstuffs affiliates here in the South Island. So it's been very successful. We're continuing to invest in this infrastructure and these people and keeping Palmerston North as our hub for liquid innovation and product development. So that, in short, is my few words around the growth strategies. Chris?
Thank you, Martijn. Final leadership team speaker is Hamish Reid, who's the Director of Sustainability and Brand at Synlait. Hamish has got a really deep experience in food and beverage marketing, predominantly with Danone in Paris and also Saatchi & Saatchi in London. In 2008, he established an award-winning not-for-profit in New Zealand, working between sport and the environment, and has consulted to businesses around the world around developing environmental and social programs that boost economic performance. Hamish joined Synlait in 2017 to develop and implement the sustainability and brand strategies. Over to Hamish.
Thanks, Chris. The last session of the day, so hang in there with me. I believe I've got 200 minutes. 20 minutes, right, okay. I could talk forever about this, but I won't. I need a clicker. Thank you. So I'm here to share our sustainability strategy with you. And that story isn't one which has a long history, actually. We're only 18 months into this journey. So bear that in mind as I'm talking. We're currently not claiming that we're better than the next guy, but we're off to a really good start to claiming that position in the future. So we are on a pivot, and it only really happened sort of 18 months ago. And we are taking a stand, and where the stand came from was really driven by our founder, John Penno, and he was reflecting upon the first 10 years of our business as we approached our 10-year anniversary. And he was seeing these signals. He was feeling the heat from the public on our environmental, the impact that we have from running our business on the environment. And we recognise that we make a contribution towards the degradation of the environment in the areas that we operate in. And that has a knock-on effect to social sustainability. He was feeling that pressure from communities. We have a really positive impact, and we have somewhat of a negative impact when it comes to social sustainability. But those of you that will know John know that he is really financially driven, and he was getting signals from the market, from our customers with discerning audiences in developed markets, that if we could improve our sustainability position, they would buy more from us and they would pay more for it. So with these points, these signals coming from environment, from social sustainability and from economics, we decided to pivot into sustainability. And as I mentioned, we've got a long way to go, but we've made a really good start. So what really underpins as a philosophy throughout our strategy is this notion of profit from purpose. And we deeply believe that we will profit from this purposeful position that we're taking. And we believe in that to the extent that we're able to have this mandate to make the bold changes that we're making. And without that belief in profit from purpose, our board, Graham here, wouldn't give us the mandate to be able to act like we are. So we're taking a stand because we deeply care about the land upon which we stand. We started as a farming business. We deeply care about our people and their social sustainability and opportunities for them to thrive into the future. We care about our farmers and their businesses, the people they employ, and the communities that they touch. And we also deeply care about running our business in a sustainable way, an economically sustainable way that will take us into a future full of health and prosperity. So this is a really complicated area, this whole area of sustainability. So we know that it's all very well setting policies and strategies, but unless you embed that in your people, it doesn't really go that far. So we've tried to break this whole story of sustainability down into one really simple story for our people, and that is that we need to get back to living well within the boundaries of one planet. So we use this construct called ecological overshoot. Has anyone heard of that? It's been in the media a bit just recently, actually, because we're approaching Ecological Overshoot Day. So what this means is that there's an organisation that gathers a whole lot of data every year from every country around the world, and they figure out the rate of resource extraction, the greenhouse gases that we're pumping into the atmosphere, the deforestation that's going on, the erosion of soil, the overfishing of oceans, all of that stuff is added up, and we figure out where our ecological overshoot position is. And where our planet is currently running at is 1.7 times. So what that means, it takes the planet roughly a year and a half to restore all of those things we're stripping from her every year. So there's an overshoot there of 1.7 times. So it's kind of frightening, right? Because there's not another half a planet floating around out there. We're currently living in a way which is like burning our own furniture to keep ourselves warm. So we've got some progress to make. But that news gets a little bit worse, because if everyone in the world lived like a New Zealander, we'd need 2.8 planets to sustain our current lifestyles. And if everyone lived like an Australian, there's plenty of Australians here, right, we'd need 3.8 planets. And if we lived like Americans, we'd need closer to 5 planets. So this just sets out in a really kind of grabbing way for our people that we need to make a contribution to getting back to living well within the boundaries of one planet. Is that making sense? So, our sustainability strategy starts with our purpose at our centre, doing milk differently for a healthier world. And this isn't different to what most organisations that are purposeful around sustainability. We work around the three principles of sustainability. We call them environment, people and enterprise. But probably what sets us a little bit apart is the scale of the ambition we have for these three areas. And the first is that when it comes to environment, we want to be net positive for the planet. And that means regenerative agriculture, manufacturing and supply chain. So we want to get to a position one day where our people can leave work at the end of a day's work knowing that the earth is in better shape than what it was when they arrived in the morning. Wouldn't that be a great aspiration to get to? We haven't quite figured out how we will get there yet, but you know, we think it's possible at some point in the future. When it comes to people, this is all about creating opportunities for all to thrive. Not just our employees, but people on our farms and people in our communities. And if we can build a fan base for the leadership position that we're taking, we think we can drive a transformation not only of our business, but of our industry, perhaps of our whole agriculture sector, maybe our country out into the world. So this is a really important thing for us is that we want to be leaving a positive legacy for future generations. And when it comes to enterprise, we've talked about us being the 21st century milk nutrition company. We have this really broad view of what milk nutrition means. It's bovine milk today, but that doesn't mean it couldn't be something else into the future. So we've got our eyes wide open on that front. But also, our heart is deeply in New Zealand. We care deeply about our land and our people, that our head is out there in the world. That is our source of economic prosperity, and that is the glow that we can return back to New Zealand. So each of those pillars and the work streams we've got going around them, there are 11 of them, mapped six of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So all the work we're doing is tracking and making a contribution to these big six of these big 17 goals that our civilization is honing in on to address. So we call these 11 areas our sustainable innovation platforms. So there are 11 of them, and they span environment, people, and enterprise. So under each of these, we have a whole lot of work streams. So just in the environmental area, I think we have 40 live projects which are going to take us towards our ambition on these four. So a big part of our organisation is galvanising around these. We've got a really small sustainability team. There's myself and one other person. But sustainability doesn't work by having a team of 50 sustainability professionals sitting in a team. Sustainability works when it's embedded throughout the entire organisation, deeply into our culture. So I work really closely with Ant's team and really closely with Rob's team, for example, out on farms and through our manufacturing and supply chain to make sure our principles of sustainability are really embedded and people themselves in those teams are making projects happen. So a little bit about our impact. Did you see the media just today about New Zealand's top 10 emitters? ECA's always told me, that's a government department that looks after energy conservation, has always told me that we're a top 10 emitter, but this data's a bit loose. But it looks like we're not in the top 10, so we avoided that media today, but I would say we're probably at least in the top 15, because number 10 I think was about 1.1 million tonnes. We're just over 900,000 tonnes. So that is 1.1% of an entire country's footprint. And when I talk to my peers, the chief sustainability officer at Unilever or at Coke or at Danone, and I tell them that our little country, our little company, 4% of New Zealand's milk stream, is 1% of the environmental impact of an entire country. They take a step back. And we talk about that as being a massive opportunity. It's terrifying, but it's a massive opportunity also, because if we can hit our goals, we can actually see a movement in the trajectory of a total country's greenhouse gas footprint. So that's a really fascinating and motivating thing about the Synlait business. So 83% of that footprint is on farm, and if you strip that out, 69% of our off-farm footprint comes from coal. So if we can focus on two things, addressing our on-farm footprint and finding a way to get ourselves off coal, we can make a dramatic dent in our footprint. So that's what we're going after. Our mechanism for going after the farm footprint is this brilliant program that Rob's talked about. It's really thriving. It's taking off. Nearly half of our farmers now are certified Lead with Pride, and this is the mechanism that we will use to dangle financial carrots, incentives, in front of our farmers to do the right thing. And it's going really well. And a really good example of that is the PKE, the palm kernel free incentive that we put in a year ago. We've had 68 farms take that up, and this was just a partial funding of getting farms off PKE and into locally sourced feed supplements. So 8 cents is probably covering a cost of maybe 12 to 15 cents, but our farmers leapt in and they've funded the difference because they see this is the right thing to do. So that's an example of how Lead with Pride's working really well, and we will use Lead with Pride as our tool to ratchet up work when it comes to addressing environmental impacts. An example of what we're doing about coal, we've installed New Zealand's first big electro boiler. It's more expensive to run, and we took a bit of a punt that over time we will profit from purpose based upon this capital intervention. It's an amazing bit of equipment, so easy to run. It takes 5 minutes to go from cold water to steam, whereas our coal boilers take at least 18 hours to get to that point. So it's a really great bit of technology, and we're really proud to be the first in New Zealand to have implemented such a piece of kit. So what I want to do now is talk a little bit more about some of those sustainable innovation platforms in that model. And the first is on climate. So we announced our bold targets in June last year, and on-farm that's minus 35% over 10 years. It's only recently that in typical Synlait fashion we set a really lofty target, and we didn't really know how we were going to achieve all of that. We knew how we might be able to achieve part of it, but we knew that we would get there with a motivated, skilled bunch of people, and we knew we'd be able to deliver that target. And we've only just really settled on an approach which we think will get us there. And I can't yet show you the legend that maps to each of these coloured slices, but we know with today's technology, and if a few things come our way and we get a few things right, we will be able to meet this target by the end of 28. So we've got a whole lot of initiatives running. Some of those slices contain three or four initiatives. We've got a whole lot of work going on farm, and we've got a great deal of confidence now that we're going to be able to get there by FY28. When it comes to our supply chain and manufacturing, we've got a similar trajectory. A lot of this is focused on getting off coal, but we've now figured out that pretty rapidly we can make a dent in that, and by FY28 we can get right through to that target with a very limited impact upon operating costs. So we're really confident that this can be a win for the planet and a win financially. And that's disregarding the potential premiums we're going to be able to build into our product mix by offering lower carbon sources of product for our customers. When it comes to water, we've been through a similar exercise. We don't have a problem when it comes to water quantity. We have a problem when it comes to water quality. And most of that is through nitrogen loss. So we've figured out that we can get to a minus 45% nitrogen loss by 2028. We're not stopping there, though, because ideally you'd have zero nitrogen loss to waterways, right? So this is really just a start. So we've got our eyes wide open. We're doing lots of innovative thinking about how we might get to zero N loss beyond FY28. But we're on a really good start, and we've got a bunch of projects which we think are going to deliver on that initial 10-year target. So when it comes to culture and community, this is really the sustainable innovation platform where we wish to live our purpose. It's where our purpose of doing milk differently for a healthier world will reside. And the problem we see with a lot of companies that set purpose, it remains this kind of esoteric thing up there for most people. And most of our workforce are deeply practical people. They're in the factory. They're working for Ant. Or when you throw a wider boundary about that, they're working out on farm. So we want our purpose to be deeply embedded into our culture. We want people to live our purpose every day. We just don't want it to be a positioning line that we play at a conference once a year. So we've been trying to figure out how we deeply embed our purpose into the daily lives of our people and all of the communities that we touch, our farming community and our wider community. So I believe the bus parked right outside this billboard, which is a program we're calling Whakapuāwai, which is a Māori word which means to cause, to prosper, to thrive, to blossom. And we think we can help our people through our purpose and help our farms and our communities connect with thriving through this program called Whakapuāwai. So this vision that we've painted here is probably a 10-year vision. It's going to take us a long time to get to this. But it starts with our backyard. So what we're intending to do here is to create an exemplar for restoration. So it starts with this corner up in the top right here, which is the native plant nursery. So we're planning to use our volunteer workforce to nurture plants with one paid day's leave a year, plus volunteering time, to grow and nurture plants that we will plant in our own backyard, but more importantly, we will take to our farms. So we've identified at least 115 hectares of land that need to be planted on farm, but we think there's probably at least triple of that to be planted on land for the purpose of stopping nitrogen and phosphorus leaching for creating habitat for the biodiversity that we need to support the ecosystem services that we need to support our farming system, but also to beautify. So the nursery starts in our own backyard, it reaches out to farmers, but we're also forming partnerships with community groups to work on areas that have been degraded that shouldn't be, that we deeply care about and that they deeply care about. So that part is about restoring taonga, and there's plenty of sites, particularly in this area, that we're going to be partnering with iwi groups to protect and restore degraded areas. So we launched this program just a couple of weeks ago at our conference. We haven't made a wide announcement about what we're planning to do here yet, but we're planning to do that later this month or early September, and that's when it will more broadly hit the media. So we think this is a really groundbreaking opportunity. It's not something that every company would do, and it's natural for us to have taken this really bold step to commit to doing such a thing that allows our practical people to live and breathe our purpose every day. And it will leave us with an asset in perpetuity that our people will be able to engage with. It's going to be open to them and their families to enjoy as an asset for after work, during work, on weekends, and we're really excited about what it will bring. Finally, transparency. This will be an area that you will all know a great deal about. And yesterday we lodged our first CDP report, so that is in their system now, and we'll be getting our rating towards the end of the year. We've also had our first ESG rating work done by Sustainalytics. We've committed to science-based targets. So we are committed to our targets on greenhouse gas emissions, ensuring that we are not contributing to warming beyond 1.5 degrees by century end. So we're in the process on science-based targets. We're hoping to get ratified on that early next year. Leon's already talked about it. We're chasing down B Corp certification. This is a really tough program. We knew it was going to be really tough. 85,000 companies around the world have so far put in their B impact assessment. These are not random 85,000 companies. These are 85,000 of the world's most high-performing companies have put in their B Corp B impact assessment score. And only so far, I think, less than 3% of those 85,000 have achieved certification. So this is a really tough program to get. And we're well down the path. We've been working on it for nearly a year now, and we're pretty confident that we're going to have certification by the end of this year. So what that means is that we will be reporting our social and environmental performance when it comes to accountability and transparency, and we'll be able to benchmark that score with the world's leaders. So you need 80 points to qualify to get B Corp certification. The highest performing company in the world, I believe, has about 170 points. Patagonia, the clothing company, is probably the most famous B Corp. They have around 150 points. About 30% of Danone's business has now been certified as a B Corp. Unilever's Ben & Jerry is a certified B Corp. When we get it, we will be the biggest company in the Southern Hemisphere that has B Corp certification, which will be a great moment of pride for us, but also a moment of opportunity, of business opportunity for us, because once you are in the B Corp family, a network of business opportunities open up, so we're going to be really looking forward to that. And we know that a whole lot of companies in the food industry are really focused on chasing B Corp also, and we think it will not only give a social license to operate, but it will be a strong consumer driver off shelf. So there are already companies that are putting the B Corp logo on their packaging, and we just see that happening more and more in the future. So what I wanted to close on is that we are trying to turn around a big ship, 4% of New Zealand milk stream. We're not trying to turn around 83% of New Zealand milk streams. That's a really big task. We're early days on this. We're a year and a half into it, but we're going at Synlait pace. We are completely committed and dedicated to this course. We know we will profit from purpose, but we also have to remain patient. 2028 is the benchmark we've set to be one of the best in the food industry at sustainability, and we've made a really good start to get towards that. So I'm looking forward to questions at the end, but if you take anything from this, we really bring it all back down to this one concept of we're trying to run our business in the future like we're living on the one planet that we do have. We're trying to encourage our people, our nearly 900 people, to think about the way that they live their lives at home and at work to live within the boundaries of one planet. So I encourage you all to do the same and to think about the impacts that you're having and how you might be able to address that to make a contribution to this big challenge that we're all facing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hamish. Our final speaker today is our chairman, Graham Milne. Graham has been with Synlait right since first ground was broken just down the road through to scaling it up to be a $2 billion company. So I'll hand over to Graham and then we'll have a quick break before we get into the Q&A.
Thanks. Great. Thanks very much, Chris. Yeah, we're not quite a $2 billion company yet. So the good news, it's been a big download of information, and thanks very much for all your patience and so on, and I hope it was all useful. The good news is I am very much the last speaker, and I've only got two slides. So it's just a few closing comments. Firstly, obviously we're taking the greenhouse gas and all emissions and our environmental footprint very seriously. I would just point out and it's proven by Hamish's comments and Leon before, I just point out the groundwater issue, the nitrates into groundwater. It is an issue. We're not running away from that at all. And particularly in this area where you are now, the whole Canterbury Plains is very porous subsoils here. And so that nitrate from dairy farming can get, not from all farming, but from dairy farming in particular, can get into the subsoils and get into our pristine waters, artesian waters that are underneath right here. So there's some, it's a gnarly problem, but there's some quite neat technology that's coming along where we think we can lead and make a real difference there. The agricultural consensus that was recently reached by all the major agricultural companies in New Zealand, the meat industry and the dairy industry, I think the fact that we came out 18 months ago and started to take a reasonably, definitive lead in the area, I think that helped drive the consensus. I'm not trying to take too much credit, but I think that Synlait has made a difference and brought the rest of the industry along to really get a consensus, to get some funds together to really make a difference in the area. In terms of the New Zealand milk pool, as Hamish said a couple of times, about 4%. Even with Pokeno, we're under 5% of the milk. We've probably reached peak milk in New Zealand, a little bit up this year, but I don't see that really climbing too much further in the future. But it's not an issue in terms of supply to Synlait at less than 5%. And you can just see that we're just taking on those 57 new farmers. So, yeah, not too much of an issue for us. The dairy legislation, again, it's there. It is legislation that affects the industry. Getting some independence into the determination of the farm gate milk price, or some more independence, that's a good thing. It's not pivotal to us, but it's a good thing. And we did submit on that, so reasonably smooth sailing there. Fonterra's performance, again, not something that's on the list because people ask about it. It's not something we comment on. It's not an issue for us. As far as we're concerned, we want a group of strong dairy companies in New Zealand operating competitively, but together where it makes sense. And to a fair degree, that's what we get in our relationship with Fonterra. So we don't focus on Fonterra, we focus on Synlait. The Westland sale, yeah, I was personally part of putting Fonterra together from the dairy companies. I was with Dairy Group at the time. I personally went down to Westland and tried to get them to join into Fonterra, and I did with Tātua as well. I wasn't particularly disappointed that they didn't want to come because I saw a future where we would have a series of dairy companies, and if you start with one, it's harder to get to 10, and if you start with three, well, then it's easier. But it hasn't worked out well, and I'm personally a bit sad that it's come to this. I think Eli will be a good owner. But it would have been nice to see, farmer-owned cooperative continue. certainly from my personal perspective as a New Zealander. But it didn't happen that way. Sort of macro issues in terms of supply, demand around the world, pretty much in balance. The US and Europe, pretty much in balance with demand growing there, so fairly stable sort of outlook there. Australia's got climatic issues, so there's a drop in milk there, but New Zealand's slightly up. So not too much happening in terms of, well, we don't see too much, you know, strong increase or strong decrease in terms of pricing. The US-China trade war, it's probably a slight positive at the moment, but it's a high risk. You know, we're not US, so it's a slight positive. Anybody that's not US and China is better than being anything to do with the US. China's GDP down 6.2%, but, you know, still strong growth, and there's a heap of growth for, you know, what we do, infant formula and dairy products in general. There's the African swine flu infecting the pork pig population in China. That has a major spin-off in terms of protein demand from China, and so there's a lot of meat products that are being diverted out of other destinations from New Zealand into China, particularly beef, and generally it's lifting the protein market around the world, so, and we're in the animal protein market, so it's a slight positive. The Chinese infant formula regulations that Suzanne mentioned, yeah, it has gone, you know, our progress there has gone slower than we would like. We've got, you know, we're fairly confident now that things are going to happen inside this calendar year. But, yeah, we've worked hard on that. And we've worked very hard. It's quite a value creator to the company. So we are a little disappointed that it hasn't gone quite as fast as we would have wanted. And the last slide, yeah, we're a full-service offering to our customers. We're focused very much in the first 10 years on B2B, solely B2B. And I've personally pushed hard to make sure that we haven't gone into FMCG at all. You know, it's a new big area that we didn't have skills in because we focused on doing everything for our B2B customers, and we certainly still will continue to do that in the future. But Talbot is our first spot in the water in terms of FMCG, and we know we've got a lot to learn, but there are some good profit pools there, particularly in the New Zealand market and in some of the international markets, and you've heard today where we're going with that. So we think we've got our eyes open in terms of the strategy. We're definitely a young company. We think differently. We have from the start, and we'll keep that in our DNA, and we've got it in the purpose there. So, and the board will be very focused on making sure that's retained. Of course, we're focused on nutritional products for global customers, and it's all about being that ethically produced. That's why that Lead with Pride program is so important. We've got to prove it right back to our source, and we can't trip in any way whatsoever. We're in that most sensitive food market in the world, which is infant nutrition, and we actually have to prove it every day. We're selling trust, and we're very, very conscious that, you know, we've absolutely got to do this right, continue to do it right. We're firmly a growth company, so don't ask about dividends. We've got heaps of ideas. There's a lot more ideas than the ones you've heard about, and they've got good returns. And so while you let us, and even if you don't, we're going to continue to invest. We've got a lot of things that have got that more than 20% IRR. And although there's some with risk, you know, we'll continue to pursue that. That's what this company's about. And there's a lot of growth left before we start to level out and give you back some money. So like I say, we're going to replicate that approach into new categories. And you've seen today what those categories are. And you've seen out at the plant, you know, the proof points on our entry. So, of course, we're just coming off spending for nearly $500 million if you count everything. And so we're happy about how it's gone. Pokeno, obviously, there's one or two issues there, or one issue in particular. We'll sort that out. Leon has talked to that. And so that's getting ourselves off a big investment program. But like we've indicated, you know, there's a reasonably sized investment program to come, and we'll bring that to you as we're ready. So I'm happy. I think we're going to go into a little bit of Q&A now. I'm very happy to answer any governance questions, but obviously management and operational questions and so on. Got the whole team here to answer. So thanks very much, and thanks very much for coming on today. It's been, hope you thought it was been great. Cheers. You can clap if you want to.
All right, let's have a quick break. We'll get the panel set up and dive straight into Q&A. So feel free to head to Slido and bump up the questions you want answered. Thanks.
The question there around, are you committed to your 20% ROIC target as the strategy diversifies the business into new product categories? I'm going to check with my chair on his expectations. I think he... Okay, there you go. So... I made a comment at the end that that's pretty much the case, and I think, you know, we do set high hurdle rates for investment. Like I said, we're a highly capital-intensive business. We make big decisions and write big checks for expensive kit, so we do have to make sure we have strong hurdle rates. And certainly, I know for us and the team, presenting something to the board, we know that we have to come with a pretty strong business case, and then, you know, we have to deliver against that. I get the question where it's coming from in terms of as we start to diversify, you're not so much in high-value nutrition, and so maybe it might be more challenging for you to deliver those rates. Francis is nodding, so I must have, maybe it's you. But look, I think that you know, what you would have seen in the strategy is we do also see that there's ways to capture more of the value by moving up the value chain. So we'll sweat that mix, B2B and high-value categories, but potentially moving up the value chain in other ways outside of other ones. So that's how we can continue to sustain that. It won't be easy, but it's what we've got to shoot for. Martin, if I could ask you the next one, has the Munchkin supply agreement been terminated, and if so, when? So it'd be good to clarify that.
Oh, yeah. No, it hasn't been terminated. So what we've shared with you is that Munchkin's decided to put US FDA registration on hold. For the rest, it's business as usual. So no, the supply agreement hasn't been terminated.
Great. Thanks, Martin. One for Ant. It's about capacity at Dunsandel for finished infant formula, and what is the utilization run rate? So, Ant, could you just give us a flavour? I know you gave us a sense of outputs and upsides. I think the team are trying to get a sense of what our capacity and output looks like. So
across the three dryers, we have a nominal 120,000 metric tons, most of you would know, and a nominal 35,000 metric tons across each of the canning lines, which is published rates. And what you've seen in the presentation today is that we're continuing to see strong improvement in driving utilization of those existing assets, not anticipating that we will run out of capacity for infant formula on those assets anytime soon.
Hmm. Yeah, my reflection on that is we need to make sure we're providing you guys with accurate information on utilization and capacities. And whilst we have been declaring that we're exceeding current published capacities, we just want to make sure we stabilise around those levels. And I'll have a chat with Ant and Nigel as we come into final year, whether we actually upgrade and make sure we're really clear around official what we know we can achieve out of our plants. But there's just to, you know, if you know anything about operations, there's always some volatility around what you can achieve. It's a function of customer demand, the nature of the product mix. So it's not always easy to be unequivocal, but I understand why there's a need to model it and understand it. There's a question around getting an update on CNCA approval process for Auckland. I know that Suzanne spoke about GAC, but it's well voted on, so why don't you just clarify where we're at there, Suzanne?
Yeah, CNCA, that's what they call GAC at the moment, GACC, the Customs Authority. Well, that's progressing well. That's the with GAC, MPI does the pre-audit. There are good contacts between New Zealand MPI and GAC. There are good contacts between Synlait and GAC. We know what we want and what they want, and we're progressing fine on that one.
Great. Thanks, Suzanne. And you can hold the mic because all the popular questions are coming your way. Do you think the Chinese regulator will ultimately move towards a requirement that IMF companies are vertically integrated? And how do you see the regs evolving? So,
I guess we heard the same as what the person who asked the question heard. Yes, they seem to have a preference for companies that integrate so that they go from the cow to the consumer within one company. We were also invited to talk at the CAAS conference in May this year, talking about our Lead with Pride program, and they're very interested in that. So it looks like companies that can show governance from cow to consumer have a preference. I can understand that. It gives you better possibility to safeguard quality and safety, and that is still very important for China. There is no legislation at the moment on this. So, but yeah, we've heard the same as you did.
Great, thanks. Martine, we didn't mention anything too much on lactoferrin, so there's a question there on global lactoferrin prices and how they've been tracking and how much we're locked in versus sold at spot and how we're balancing that risk.
Yeah, lactoferrin, yeah, we're clearly very happy with the decision we made around 18 months ago to expand capacity. I've been working with lactoferrin since the late 90s, and supply and demand, right, that imbalance it's always been volatile, and right now we're definitely at a peak. The prices are a bit higher than we expected. But like I said, volatility is how lactoferrin market is characterized over the past 20 years. So I expect that there will be a correction in the medium term at some point if historic data are still valid. So we're content with that. And the other part of the question was around the balance between spot and contracted.
Yeah.
It is actually consciously balanced. So we've set out to expand the capacity that we put into place before the start of this year's milk season, and we've kept the balance between spot and contract.
Yeah, again, I think we've talked a lot about Synlait's model of making sure we underwrite investments with long-term contracts. The lactoferrin play that we've talked about, we've done exactly the same thing. Make sure we secure the bottom base case and then ride any upside with spare capacity. So just like we've done in the liquids plant, we've talked about that. It's, again, the same sort of approach we've taken with lactoferrin. Really interesting category, but of course there's some uncertainty in there, and there's lots of interest in it and lots of investment in new capacity. So we're realistic around what our returns will be there over the long term, but we're confident that we know how to build, design and run these plants in a pretty good way. So we produce a really high quality lactoferrin for our customers, and we're really pleased with what capability we're developing there. And this one's a little bit sensitive in terms of how we talk about things, but how many shifts at Auckland are we running, and what products are we producing there?
Yes, it's a little sensitive. So without going into the details of how we structure shifts, I can say there's a number of ways that we can structure our staffing. We're seeing gains from both of our canning lines, both setting record throughputs, and comfortable that we can meet all customer demand that's coming our way in the foreseeable future.
Great, thanks, Sam.
The levers are there. Happy.
Yep. I'm just going to scroll down. Sorry, there was one about why do we have a five-year revenue target rather than a returns-based target? Maybe Graham and Boyd might even want to comment here on how we drive that. Of course, we have targets for profitability. We've chosen the target we shared on our ambition has a revenue focus because it is the way that we cascade targets to our people. So the main idea is not that we want to drive commercial targets there. We want to make sure we're driving focus for our people on what to do. And in my experience, the best way to link core people is around what to do with the outcomes you want to achieve to deliver profitability rather than profitability itself, because you can drive an appropriate behaviour. So our view is get teams focused on driving growth in a positive way, high quality growth, focus on building a good quality culture and people that are developing, and focus on driving loss, efficiency and waste. It's much more tangible, much more easy and outcome-based for people to focus on. But, you know, we will, of course, have business plans that are focused on return on capital, focused on profitability. But, you know, for us, that's why we share and create that target so that it's cascadable. But, Graham, I don't know if you had some thoughts on that. And
pretty hard to add to that, actually, Leon. Yeah, yeah. So it's all about scope and scale for the team, you know, so that they realise what sort of ambition we have and what sort of size of that ambition is. When we first set up the company, we had a meeting of 7 of the 8 staff, not too far from here, and we wrote on one piece of paper, you know, what we were about, and we wrote, it was a 10-year target, and we said we're going to be a $1 billion company and we'd have a market cap of $1 billion. And we pretty much hit those targets last year. So, you know, that gave the team, well, okay, so these are the sorts of scale of projects and things and profit pools and opportunities that we need to think about. And I think this does it again, you know, the $2 billion in 5 years.
Yeah, I think simplicity is a big part of it, and it gets our leadership focused on the lead indicators rather than the outcome and the way that they lead teams across the business. It is, of course, one of the hurdles in our long-term investment, our long-term incentive plan as well.
Yeah, great. Okay, thanks, Boyd. Rob, there's a question here on how we're monetising Lead with Pride and where that's coming from. So do you want to make a comment on that?
Yeah, sure. Look, monetising Lead with Pride is very close to my heart. I mean, I think the thing to remember is it's only just been the last kind of couple of years that we've really got Lead with Pride to the scale. So we're just under 50% now. We've got a lot of farms in the pipeline. And the sustainability has really gained traction over the last couple of years as well. So at the moment, we've got initiatives running inside the company on how do we best crystallise that over the next wee while. But it's really important that Lead with Pride is made sustainable and that we earn money from it directly in our revenue line.
Great. Thanks, Rob. There's a question here on the relationship with A2 and how it's evolved post-management change. Perhaps Martijn, you can make a comment on that, and maybe Graham as well. We could give your thoughts.
I'll give my modest view on more operational management involvement over the last, let's say, year. We've reflected on that just recently, and we felt that there's been a much, much closer cooperation in terms of cross-functionally connecting with A2. I think we've, from both sides, really built on the trust and the understanding of you know, capabilities and needs. I think we're in a very good place with that relationship myself.
Yeah, the board had actually dinner with Jane on Tuesday night in Christchurch, and she's an extremely capable lady. And I draw a parallel with Sinlay, actually. You know, we had and Jeff Babbage, they had a build CEO, and so did we with John Penno, and now we've got a sustain and grow CEO and cement all of that in place. And so they have with Jane. You know, she's an extremely professional, capable person, and that shows even in the first 30 seconds that you meet her. So it's going to be good.
Great. Suzanne, you're popular for questions around SAMR. Will SAMR come to Australia for inspections on the same trip to New Zealand?
There's actually not a good reason why they would do that, unless maybe it's logistically interesting. But no, while we sometimes talk about ANZ in one go, China never does that. So they can be friends with one country and less friendly to another. They never take Australia and New Zealand in one go. If they talk to us, they talk about New Zealand and not about Australia. So there's not a good reason why they should or why they shouldn't. Usually their trips are not that long, so, but sometimes they are, yeah. No, can't really say anything about it. I do know that Australia is not on the list at the moment.
So that may answer the second question, Suzanne. How do you rate registration prospects for Aussie players? So I think we'll leave it at that. Oh gosh, it's just reordered there. Okay, why don't we have a go at this one? It's around sport nutrition or functional powders being largely whey, or can you leverage the A2 casein proposition? And is this a growth market globally or only for specific markets? So I know Martin, your team did a lot of the desk-based research for this, and I can throw it open to anybody who wants to think about it.
Yeah, when we look at sports nutrition, like I mentioned earlier, it is the established, I think, classic sports nutrition products are often whey protein isolates or sometimes whey protein concentrates based, but you see an emergence of casein, slow-release proteins, becoming more popular, especially more towards the serious athletes and weekend warriors are starting to explore it. We're still trying to understand the where to play before we really are going to consider the how. So for us, it's around making sure we understand the consumer behaviors and the different growth areas. And I'd say globally, sports nutrition is still growing. So even in Australia, where sports nutrition is by far in the Asia Pacific the largest market, there the CAGRs and the forecast CAGRs are still very positive. So overall, it's a growth market.
Great. And we'll stay with you as well, Martin. There's a question on the pipeline for new liquid dairy products, specifically for higher value formats and products, UHT, yogurt, for potential exports. So I know you spoke to that, but you want to give a bit more colour around how the pipeline is building?
Well, the way we've designed the plant that you visited this morning, the liquid plant, is to have flexibility around what we can do with that. I don't know, I wasn't with you, but if you paid attention, you see that we can actually make formulated liquid products, so that's products where you have different oil blends worked up into it, but you can also make fermented products like drinking yogurts, etc. These are both areas where we believe there's a lot of high-value potential. As an example, in China, the highest value category within everyday dairy after infant formula, everyday dairy, ambient drinking yogurt is by far the largest and most profitable category. So it's quite different from how we would look at our everyday dairy cabinet when we go to the supermarket. But that's how we have to drive insights for us to understand in each individual market where we believe long term we have market access under the right trading terms, what are specific products and product subcategories that we can chase after. So the pipeline is broad, and initially we focus on within the capability of the plant that you saw this morning.
Thanks. We've got time for two more. I'm going to try and answer a series of questions that are still built in there around Pekino, and I'll have another go at that in terms of what's come up. And Rob, there's that one on inventory and working capital that I think we'll give you that. So we'll do those two and then probably wrap up from there. Just on Pekino, there's a question in there that implies that we are breaching some planning permissions. That's not true. We have got all of the required planning approval through all the district councils and the RMA and all of the building consents. We're meeting all of the requirements with officials for the build of Pekino. So it's really important to understand we're not breaking the law in building that, right? Where the contestability is this is a privately held covenant which exists. The benefactor is the neighbour, right? And that's where the dispute is. The High Court had removed that covenant which allowed us to build, and the Court of Appeal put it back on again. Okay, so that's why we're in a mix. That's why we feel really comfortable that the stakes are not that the plant will get shut down or we won't be able to use it. Right? It's more likely this will either get settled and resolved because of the discussion that we're talking through, or it'll get benefits or costs will be awarded through a court process.
And I think the market is implying at the moment that there's a much higher punitive approach through some other speculation than what the court might award against this. So I just want to try and be really clear. It's important you guys have a good sense of what the risk is around this. Like I said, we're not happy about it. But we think, given that we're following all of the rules, this is a pretty grey area of property law, that the things have been pulled off and put back on again. We think the most likely outcome is either a settlement or a court will award some benefits to some costs or damages to the beneficiary, and they will be minimal. So I hope that clarifies that little bit. And then I know that some of you were in the business today and you saw how much inventory was sitting there and stored. That's not unusual for a dairy business in the way that we process ingredients. Again, it talks a little bit about the fact that we have to take milk and process it, but I thought, Rob, you should just talk to inventory management and working capital.
Yeah, thanks, Leon. There's a couple of reasons why we do actually hold some inventory towards the end of the financial year, and one of them's simply because our customers pay us to. So we're a single site, so some customers want to hold safety stock. That's one key reason. The other reason is, as we were talking before in the presentations, one of the other things we do is we try and square the curve. So we hold some product there to process into infant formula in the early part of the year. Not with saying, there's always room to improve, and the inventory management initiative is where we're going to be trying to push harder. And the business is changing, so we're not as risky as we used to be for some customers because we've got another site now, and as that site develops, there's less rationale for customers to hold as much safety stock as well. So that all needs to be looked at and needs to be worked through within the business and with our customers.
Great. Thanks, Rob. Okay, we'll wrap it there. I'm guessing that we've still got a long way to go on ESG and environmental importance, given Hamish didn't answer any questions, so we'll keep working on you. Our goal for next Investor Day is to have the most voted on question around environment, right, Hamish?
Maybe I just answered them all in my talk.
Maybe you did such a good job. Hey, look, really great to engage with you, see some familiar faces and connect. Of course, we're always available for questions, so please come through Chris or Hannah, who's now picked up the investor relations portfolio. Really looking forward to going forward into the next year. Hope you've got something out of today. It's been enjoyable and informative. Safe travels back home or onwards to ski destinations and weekends around New Zealand. Thanks.